Kia ora, it's Sam from the Not at the Dinner Table podcast. It's Wednesday, which means it's time for my weekly catch-up with Environment Canterbury Councillor and Local Government New Zealand Council member, Lan Farm. This week we talked about the proposed reforms to the Resource Management Act. What was the original Resource Management Act designed to do? Because that was passed into law in 1991.
That's correct.
And then it's been, you know, it's been about 30 years and they've realised now that, hey, it's time for a bit of a shake-up.
It was, you know, seen as like this really innovative, I guess, leading piece of environmental protection legislation. But essentially what it's come down to over the last 30 years is, I would summarise as being death by a thousand cuts.
Really?
Its whole purpose was essentially sustainable management of our natural and physical resources. Basically, we can use our resources in a way that doesn't compromise the reasonably foreseeable needs of future generations. But basically what happened is, death by a thousand cuts, where development continued in a way that basically all its effects added up into a real disaster for the environment. I must say, apart from air quality
really?
Is a little bit of a winner.
Huh. So they were able to put in clear rules in the original Resource Management Act about air quality, but didn't quite manage to do the same things about...
Well, no. What basically happened was, because there's the Resource Management Act, but then that would have to be sort of put into place by regional policy statements and regional plans, and also district plans. I think there's actually over 100 different district and regional plans across New Zealand, and everyone interprets things differently.
I was listening to an interview on 9 to Noon on RNZ, and the person they were speaking to, I forget his name, but he said that this was the longest and most complicated piece of legislation that we have, because of the number of amendments made to it, and that if you printed the whole legislation and all of the amendments made out on paper, it would stack up as tall as the then Environment Minister, David Shearer. So,
I hadn't actually heard that, but that is really interesting.
Yeah.
It essentially was sort of, changed so much it ended up like a dog's breakfast.
Right. So, because there's three pieces of legislation that would replace this one big complicated one.
Yeah.
Well, that's what's, you know, been suggested anyway. Under those new, you know, those three new bits of law, one of the main ways that it said that local government would be involved is working with central government and mana whenua to come up with strategies and plans for different categories of land. You know, some that are like, yes, you can develop that. No, you need to preserve that. Is that the only way, or is that the main way that local government would be involved in that whole process? Or would there be new district plans?
Yeah, essentially there would be new, well, I think they're called regional plans now. So we'd basically do away with 100 plus regional and district plans, and they'll bring in 14 different regional plans.
Still a lot.
It's still quite a bit, isn't it?
Yeah.
So personally, my perspective is that still is at a level where you can get community input, you can make it bespoke for your region and that kind of thing, which I think is important, really important. But it's not at that scale of being like totally overwhelming, where if someone wants to do something, they're confused about what actually works in their area.
One major thing I noticed is that there's been a recommendation that, it sounds really minor, you know, they're wanting to change one clause, you know, the wording of one sentence between the current Resource Management Act and the proposed new pieces of legislation. So the current Resource Management Act, when it comes to Te Tiriti or Waitangi, the expectation is that those who are making decisions around what can and can't happen under the Resource Management Act, that they give consideration to sort of the principles of the treaty, whereas under this new legislation, the wording would be changed that they have to give effect to instead of just consideration. What is that change in wording actually going to mean?
I hope it's going to mean a lot. I think here in Aotearoa, I think we are at a in a place where we are much more conscious generally about our history and about how, you know, our roots in colonisation and how Māori really did get, and this is just going to, like, for want of better terms, really screwed over in so many ways. And then that's been a consistent thing throughout the last, you know, few generations. And I think we want to get that right. And to me, this is a really cool example and a very necessary and valuable example of how we might get it right. So when it was, you just had to consider those things, it was really easy to just write them off or have kind of like your more like tick box exercise where people would be like, oh, have we consulted with mana whenua or iwi Māori? And even if you kind of hadn't, you know, maybe you could tick it anyway, maybe you didn't have processes in place that actually made that meaningful or anything like that. So, yeah, I really hope that I think not only this legislation, but, yeah, the freshwater legislation, which is already out, and also the National Policy Statement for Indigenous Biodiversity, which is about to come out, everything has much more clearly the fact that the Treaty of Waitangi is actually the central pillar of like how we operate here in New Zealand.
That could be a bit interesting though, because there's obviously the two different translations of the treaty, you know, one in English, one in Māori, with a couple of fairly significant differences mm-hmm. in terms of wording and what that means. The Māori translation is the one that's accepted internationally, whereas it's the English translation that's accepted and recognised by the New Zealand government. Could that not potentially run into some trouble, you know, with the English translation having, you know, sort of a different understanding of when it comes to Māori ownership and sort of, you know, their relationship with the land?
Yeah.
While we might be giving effect to the principles of the treaty, there's two different treaties, you know, and they both have different interpretations of what things mean.
Yeah. I don't actually know, like, the legal ins and outs, like, in terms of, like, which has precedence. But the point being that absolutely, I think it's going to be messy, like any change and very necessary changes. And I think although there are differences between the interpretation, the Māori and English interpretations, there's really clear things about partnership, about, you know, rangatiratanga or tino rangatiratanga.
Rangatiratanga being?
Basically, I guess, leadership, governance. Yeah, you should Google about
the
translation. Yeah. Sovereignty, I think, actually is the word I'm looking for.
Chieftainship, right to exercise authority.
Nice.
Yeah, kingdom, realm, sovereignty, principality, self-determination, self-management.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. That self-determination and self-management is key. So it's basically not saying, and people interpret the rangatiratanga as ownership and see it as like a sort of onslaught on private rights because, you know, people have consents to use water and that kind of thing. And again, that could get messy as well. But the messy is what's absolutely necessary for us to move from where we have been in this essentially space where we have, as a society, essentially been cool with polluting our environment and been okay with people profiting off that, moving towards actually this idea that we, I think, have a responsibility not only to ourselves as today's society, but future generations.
A lot of this, I'm aware, might come across as, you know, just a bunch of complicated legislation. Like, why should we care, you know?
Yeah.
Is anything going to change day to day, just that, you know, your everyday person walking around is going to notice? Or
I think, yeah, the question of will people notice is a really good question, because I think increasingly today we're pretty bloody disconnected from our environment. Like, we are, like, it's sort of the privileged few that actually get to first of all, have the resources and the time and flexibility to be able to go out and enjoy our natural environment.
Are we disconnected from our environment, or are we disconnected from all of the rules and laws that dictate what happens to it?
I think both.
Both?
Yeah, I think both. And why I say that is because, for example, at Environment Canterbury, we increasingly and always hear from people who, like the most recent one I can think of is at our last long-term plan hearing. And we had a woman come in and talking about the Selwyn River, and she was saying, my family, like her parents and their parents, spent their whole lives and childhoods around the Selwyn Waikarikari River. Fishing in it, swimming in it, it was just everything. Like their especially their summers, it was everything. Now not only can her children, you know, they could barely swim in it when they were like teenagers and that kind of thing, but now they have children, and those children have never, ever swum in that river because, well, A, it barely has water in it anymore, but B, when it does, it's completely toxic and polluted. It's not only the loss of experience, it's the loss of, it's basically described as what's called the shifting baseline. We, over time, when we lose so many things, we accept their loss instead of essentially like fighting back sounds quite aggressive, but it's sort of like protecting what is most dear, not only to us, but the rights of younger and future generations to have the things that we enjoyed.
So just because it doesn't personally impact us doesn't mean that it doesn't matter quite deeply to other people.
Absolutely. And I think as well, like, you know, we do have this perception, and I'm totally guilty of it myself, like growing up, like I kind of thought, oh, you know, like someone else is doing good stuff and will make sure that we have clean drinking water and saving the world and that kind of thing. And the more I've come to see, you know, leadership and leaders in New Zealand, the more I'm seeing that actually, no, there's not necessarily some smart adult somewhere fighting for your rights. And so personally for me, looking at the RMA reforms, I am just like, I just feel this huge sense of relief. And but also like relief kind of sounds like, oh, then it will be all done, phew, which it's not. It'll be like, that will be the starting point of a new way of our relationship with the environment and how we actually connect to it.
Product of the New Zealand Broadcasting School at Ada Institute of Canterbury.